In this age of unfiltered culture wars, a gritty crime drama has struck a real nerve. The Netherlands, now following the UK, launching initiatives to show Netflix four-part series Adolescence in middle schools. This while France's education ministry ponders tighter controls on teens exposed to hate speech and porn online. We'll ask about a fiction inspired by real-life cases of boys who went so far as to murder girls. Tragic outliers or a genuine trend? A decade ago, already, this very show was grappling with the issue of parents shocked to discover that their teens had self-radicalized online in their bedrooms. Back then, we were talking about jihadism. Now, it's about fears that men are somehow being canceled or replaced, an allegation amplified by the likes of influencer Andrew Tate, recently sprung from a Romanian jail after alleged pressure from the Trump administration. Have we gone from bro culture to a war of the sexes? A war against women that starts at a young age, it seems. And what should we do about it? Today in the France 24 debate, we're talking about toxic masculinity and teenagers. With us, Alice Apostoli, co-founder and co-director of the Gender and Geopolitics Institute. Welcome to the debate.
Good evening. Thank you.
From London, child online safety advisor, Elizabeth Milodevov, assistant professor at the American Graduate School of Paris and founder of digital parenting site Coach.com. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also in the UK capital, Jacob Johansson, associate professor in communications at St. Mary's University, London, author of Fantasy Online Misogyny and The Manosphere. Welcome.
Thank you.
And from we'll be joined later from Brisbane, Australia, by Kate Cantrell, senior lecturer in writing, editing, and publishing at the University of South Queensland. You can, by the way, listen, like, and subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. In less than 1 month, it's become one of the 10 most streamed shows on Netflix and sparked a conversation between educators, parents, and teachers. We're talking about adolescence, which gained traction last week, Alice Apostoli, when the UK Prime Minister brought in some of the screenwriters and actors and said that after viewing it with his own teenage children, he was considering initiative to show it in middle schools. First of all, your thoughts on the show?
So I think Adolescence does a great job illustrating the narratives and the extreme entitlement of a lot of young men and boys that are exposed to this to the manosphere. What we call the manosphere is a diversity of masculinist movements and communities online that have been around for over two decades, including the intel community that is mentioned in the series, so the involuntary celibates. This radicalization of young boys.
Hold on, there's several concepts there. You're going fast here.
Sorry.
What is the manosphere and what are involuntary celibates?
So the manosphere is what we call the many subcultures and movements online. There's a different ideologies and different movements, different forums, and they all share the same common point is that they promote violence against women in one way or another. And in the case of the involuntary celibates, which means that they it's a community that deem themselves oppressed genetically, and that interpersonal relationships, intimacy is a need and is entitled to them. When it comes to the incels, a lot of terrorist attacks and terrorist attacks attempts are revendiqué.
Claimed
by the incel ideology.
By incel ideology, dating back all the way to 2014. Let me ask you, Elizabeth Milovidov, is this something new that we're suddenly discovering because this TV series is well filmed, or is this something old?
Oh my goodness, thank you for this question. It is a drama, and this is something that is old. This is not the first time that we've had discussions about toxic masculinity. If we look at media, you can remember things 20, 30 years ago, like Rambo and The Terminator. And if you go a little bit further, we can, come closer. There were all sorts of other shows. And actually, one of the beginning was with American Psycho, the film that had Christian Bates in it. So this is not anything new. And I think the underlying thing that I really want parents and caregivers to realize is that we need to talk about how boys are feeling. Why are they searching out this type of material? What kind of comfort is this giving them? And because, you know, internet and digital spaces and algorithms, I mean, they just go into an algorithmic echo chamber and they just keep hearing the same things back to them again. But this is not new. And please, this is a drama. This is not a fit-all solution for online issues.
And as I said in my introduction, in this very studio 10 years ago, we were having the discussion, of course, replace incel with jihad. And it was parents shocked to discover that their children have been self-radicalizing in their bedrooms. In the show, the character of the father is particularly poignant in that he seems completely caught out by what he's discovering. Your reaction, Elizabeth, when you saw that?
Yeah, I understand it. And this is what I have been trying to do for the past 15 years, is to make sure that parents realize that the simplest step is by having conversations. I know that we don't all have time. As the mother of two young boys, I know how difficult it is, but it is just that conversation and that critical thinking, and not to be surprised when they come back with some things that you wish they had never said to you, because they are seeing it. They are being exposed to it. And if it's not on their own devices, so for all the parents who think they have parental controls and everything is locked down, it's not just on their own devices, it's on their friends' devices. It's, you know, the neighbor, it's other places and other things that they're seeing. So we need to just have a global and continued conversation with them. And we're talking about boys, but just as you so rightly mentioned, the jihad movement, this is also same sort of radicalization we saw with girls a little while ago, where they were having body image issues and self-esteem. It's always the same sort of problem when children are lonely and vulnerable, and they believe that internet has all the answers for them.
Jacob Johansson, let me ask you, tell us about the political conversation where you are right now in the UK on this. Again, is it because this is a well-made series that's attracted a lot of eyeballs, or is there something more to the fact that this has come up at this moment in time?
Well, we always need to, everything is always political. In a way, it is a very well-made series. I also do think it is a very, very nuanced series. It is very, very complex in how all these different issues are portrayed in the series, and it's done very, very well. And it's there are many, many layers to this, and there are many layers to this topic as well. That's why I think it's good that we're talking about it. But what we, of course, have also been seeing over the last 10, 15 years or so is that there is a distinct link between rising populist movements, rising right-wing populism across the West, and an amplification, a great increase in online misogyny. We know that right-wing populists are often also misogynists. They are often sexists, or they hold incredibly conservative views when it comes to gender and sexuality. So it's not a coincidence that such a series emerges at this point where, you know, we could say
And what's your feeling on that, Jacob? Is it the echo chamber that only one side is talking about it? I heard that the leader of the Conservatives, she said she hadn't seen the series. Is it, again, an echo chamber question. One, for one side, adolescence is a phenomenon. For the other, it doesn't exist?
I think that's difficult to say. In a way, because this is popular culture, so that means lots and lots of people will see it. As you said, it's you know, breaking records. It's the most streamed series now, certainly in this country and I think across Europe. So that means lots of people will, you know, be exposed to that, which is a very good thing. In terms of the political conversation, the conservatives are perhaps a little bit less vocal about these sort of issues when it comes to that. But I think that's also because we have a Labour government. So whichever party is in government now will sort of be setting the agenda. And I very much agree with the idea that this is now being shown in schools or that's put forward as a proposal. I think that's a very good idea.
Right now, Alice Apostoli here in France, it's gotten a lot of coverage, but in the TV critics page, mostly the series, not the way we saw in the UK, or by the way, in the Netherlands, where they are now saying they also want to make it available in middle schools, this show. But we have seen in recent days talk about, again, this how online hate speech, online pornography can be curbed for teenagers. Is there a move afoot that's a general move afoot to redress again or to address this issue of echo chambers?
There is an effort to put forward this issue in France, but this is mainly from a feminist movement's perspective. The French Ministry of Internal Affairs deemed the masculinist movement a sectarian risk starting 2021, but only as a religion or spirituality. So it is not deemed today in France as a political issue. And it's mainly tackled through the lens of the abuse of staying on social media or young people being too addicted to social media and having those platforms as a main source of information. So it's not deemed as a true battle for women's rights.
All right, and whether that will change, we'll see. But certainly this show could weigh on the conversation. Jennifer Ben-Brahim has more.
A British family's world falls apart.
You're making a big mistake.
As their 13-year-old son is arrested.
Dad, I haven't done anything!
Accused of having murdered his female classmate. Netflix's four-part series, Adolescence, is a fictional tale steeped in reality.
I'm going to start off with asking you.
Do you know a girl called Katie Leonard?
And I've seen an incident on the telly, again, where there was, like, quite a few young boys who stabbed young girls and taken their life. And if I'm really honest with you, it hit my heart. Do you know what I mean? And it instantly made me think, what's going on with society where this kind of thing's happening?
It's a call to action by the Manosphere.
From a fatal stabbing of 12-year-old Ava White in 2021 to the crossbow killer Kyle Clifford, who searched online for misogynistic podcasts just hours before murdering his ex-girlfriend, as well as the Southport murderer deliberately targeting young girls, leading to some of the worst unrest in the country in over a decade. Adolescence examines the devastating and sometimes fatal consequences of online toxic masculinity, especially on young people.
I've came across it very, very frequently, to be honest, and how easily it can indoctrinate your mind.
I can definitely resonate with, like, boys acting like that because of the school I go to.
80% of women are attracted to 20% of men. You must trick them because you'll never get them in a normal way.
Statistics show that the number of women killed, injured or threatened by a knife in the UK has more than doubled in a five-year period, leading to a call to action by UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer. He invited the creators of Adolescence to 10 Downing Street and announced the series will be shown in secondary schools.
It has lit a touch paper, I think. This isn't something new which parents and children are discovering for the first time. It's very real and raw, because it is shining a torch on something which we all know has been there and growing for some time.
Sounding the alarm, As more and more boys and young men turn to influencers like the self-proclaimed misogynist Andrew Tate, or social media platforms promoting incel culture.
You look at what the women's movement has done. We have empowered women. We can talk about our emotions. We have very tight-knit communities. But there isn't that kind of cultural information and support for young boys. And so into this void, the only people who step forward are people on the far right and in the manosphere, like Andrew Tate. And ostensibly, what he offers is what young boys want. They want to be told how to be men. It's basically down to you need to become very fit, you need to invest in cryptocurrency, and you need to blame any problems in your life on wokery and women. We need to make sure our communities have support for boys.
Adolescents launched the week that the UK put into action its Online Safety Act. Platforms like Instagram and TikTok must safeguard against harmful content or face a fine. A survey by the UK's Children's Commissioner found that half of the 13-year-olds surveyed had reported seeing hardcore misogynistic pornographic material on social media.
Elizabeth Milovidov, how much do you blame on social media? And how much of this is down to what you were talking about earlier, the breakdown sometimes in communications within families?
It is definitely true that social media and social media platforms can be a vehicle for all of these types of issues, whether it's inappropriate content, misogyny. But I just really want to come to one point. You asked about showing adolescents in schools. I don't think that that's the right answer so quickly. And I really want to stress this point, because I think that for parents and educators and older teens, perhaps, but the idea of showing this to younger kids, this is not a teaching tool. This is a trauma trigger. And we have no idea what is going on with them. And it's not a solution. It is it's just glorifying this sort of trauma, and it can be emotionally overwhelming for them. And it's not a starting point. So I think we need to, realize that it is a great, brilliant and brutal film that is bringing this and creating awareness. And again, this awareness about what's happening on social media platforms, what can possibly happen on gaming platforms, what is happening in the online world. But for me, we need to go further and we need to go farther. We need to sit here and talk about critical thinking again. We need to get those parents, not the ones who always come to my safety talks, but we need to get the ones who can't make it, and we need to reach them. And those are the types of tools that I wish the UK government would provide to parents and to caregivers.
Jacob Johansson, you agree that perhaps it's not for younger teenagers?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I think we can place some trust in teenagers, that they are, emotionally competent enough already in dealing with this sort of thing. I wouldn't necessarily per se sort of regard it as a trauma trigger. It is a very, very distressing piece of popular culture, but I think it can serve as a conversation starter. It's not a solution to anything by any means, but it can be a conversation starter. I also think we need to have a much wider conversation. We've touched on issues of regulation. That is very, very important. We've talked about there need to be sort of spaces made available for boys to have those conversations. But what we are also seeing here, this amplified misogyny, is also symptomatic of lots of other massive transformations that we are seeing when it comes to the digital. So when it comes to things like dating apps, when it comes to things like how relationships are now formed, and the series does that really, really well when it comes to, things like how adolescence now plays out online, and bullying plays out online and so on. Those are things that affect everybody, and the misogyny that we're seeing is an extreme symptom of that. So we need to have conversations around, the role of dating apps, the role of social media in general. I think that is also important.
Elisa Postori, cyberbullying is not new anymore. It's been around for nearly two decades at this point. But what is interesting, and there was, I think, a survey that came out here in France last week that showed the number of hours spent on telephones just keeps growing. And for teenagers, it's above 30 hours a week. If it's that, then how do you address the question put forward by Jacob?
So I would say that I think we should raise awareness regarding disinformation, regarding how to be equipped and counter harmful narratives and misogynistic narratives.
What, so special civics classes in schools, for instance? How would you do it?
That would be classes in school, but also awareness, global awareness campaigns that also target adults. The Manosphere does not only target adolescents, although they are easily attracted, but also older men, divorcees, for example, because there are some NGOs created by divorced men that are part of this community. There are younger men from 24 to 30 that
are
quite
active.
Part of
this Manosphere community.
Exactly. And when it comes to political actions, so there are violent attacks by adolescents, so in Bordeaux or Annecy a few months back in France, but there are also political actions that are actively supported and organized by men in their 20s, 30s, 40s. So it would be a mistake to only tackle this issue through social media and adolescents. This is a political issue, and it shows in the voting polls that we have been witnessing in the past years. The Manosphere is a pool of supporters of right and far-right parties.
The Manosphere, I guess, is the most radical manifestation of that, but there's more. But the gray areas run very wide. For instance, it can seem like a bit of clickbait infotainment when the pro-Trump cable news channel Fox News in the U.S. runs a banner asking if tariffs are manly. To put it into context, there was a round table with a bit of banter that sounds like water cooler chatter, but does assigning a gender to trade policy carry a more sinister subtext? Some of that is very
accurate. When you sit behind a screen all day, it makes you a woman. Studies have shown this. Studies have shown this. And if you're out working, like building robots like Harold, you are around other guys. You're not around HR ladies and lawyers.
What do
that
you do?
Gives you estrogen.
So Elizabeth Milovanov, you hear the other panelists chuckling. It's to provide a bit of banter. It's probably good for ratings. But is it funny or is it something serious what we're hearing that's just there?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, it's not funny. And a lot of this, these jokes and this irony that begins, you know, this is how even with Rambo and things like that, it started off, it was ironic, and then it just becomes part of a movement. And I think it's really crucial to me, the fact that you brought in politics, because I think there is a link there with toxic masculinity, online misinformation, political extremism. They're not separate issues anymore. And so you can see, you know, where we start getting things like a gym advice or dating tips or just some political views. And that's where it starts off. And then the next thing you know is you go down deep into the rabbit hole. And again, this algorithmic echo chamber, all of a sudden it's against women, it's against minorities, it's against LGBTQ+, it's against democracy. And, you know, this is a huge issue. And really, I am wondering how we're going to pull back on a lot of this, the drama, the fear that is selling, the books that are selling, anxious generation. We're getting everybody riled up, and yet we are not taking care of the young people. We are not empowering the parents.
So let me ask you, Elizabeth, because earlier you were ruing the fact that when you give your talks, you feel sometimes like you're preaching to the converted. How do you break through the echo chamber?
Honestly, I do not know. I wish I did. And I hope that people who are watching this find the solution, have a solution, something that's worked in a different area that they can share with me, because this is something that we really have to get out. It's not a matter of being kind. It's not a matter of having, you know, the right people in the right rooms. Sometimes I naively thought it was pushing back on some of this negative and toxic viral content with positive content. But again, sometimes the algorithms are just stronger. And really, I mean, we're in media. We know if it bleeds, it leads. And so a lot of these things, this is what goes to the top of the pile. And I think just in general, the population, the world, we have to do better. We have to do better for our children.
Jacob Johansson, earlier we had, back in February, there was a general election in Germany, and the exit polls showed among young men under 30s, the number one party was the far right. Among under 30 women, it was the far left. What does that tell you?
Yes, I think we do need to take that seriously. I think we do seem to have an issue where certain young men, and we also need to remember the other party that really grew in votes was you know leftist party in Germany as well. So we need to sort of take that into account. But we do have an issue here where it seems to be the case that young men are turning more towards the right and women don't. So I do think we need to have a conversation around where those men feel, you know, they may feel alienated, lonely. Lots of the kind of discussions that take place in the manosphere, in the incel community, for example, they are about, you know, misogyny. They are about very, very destructive fantasies being shared there. But at the same time, there's also lots of discussion around mental health issues, being unsuccessful, being lonely, you know, feeling rejected, all of that. We do need to somehow take that into consideration and think about why. Is it that some men, of course it's not all men, have those sentiments, and what can we do about them? And for that reason, this is not just a debate about misogyny. It also goes beyond that.
Well, there are, it seems, real life differences these days in this globalized world between men and women. Back in the fall, we did a show highlighting a gender gap in voting intentions on the U.S. elections campaign trail, similar to what we just talked about regarding Germany. Turns out there's also a growing gender gap in the U.S. when it comes to education. Student bodies at university are increasingly female. These statistics have put up by the Pew Research Group in the United States, showing that the number of women graduating from four-year colleges, 47% now, and 37, a 10-point gap between men and women. Fewer men than women graduating. So I guess down the line, in a world where we're going to need skilled labor, I'll put it to you, Elisa Postoli, that means that men are going to have a legitimate, perhaps, reason for saying that they are shut out of some jobs.
There are legitimate issues in the manosphere.
Why are we seeing that gap?
The fact that women tend to do better academically is not new either. And there are mainly more graduate more than men usually, but they don't really, it doesn't really show on the labor market, usually. High-paying jobs and a job with responsibility, most of the time.
Women still earn less.
Exactly. There's still this glass ceiling that exists. So this 10 points gap won't really be reflected, in my opinion, on the labor market.
But if we look at that chart going forward, do you get the sense there'll be more and more men resenting the fact that they're shut out of good jobs?
I think there will be the same way mental health issues, the same way that they are already falsely claiming that these legitimate issues that men and boys face are the fault of women and girls, are the fault of social justice initiatives, are the fault of feminist movements. They already have the scapegoats, which are any social justice movement that take back the privileges that they've been benefiting from for the whole human history. And this is a perceived attack, and this is a feeling of being robbed. It already exists, it's already in place, and women, girl, and every progressist movements are already vilified in the manosphere. So I think it would be the same trend and the same discourses.
Elizabeth Milovidov, what are the real-life differences these days between men and women? Again, when I think back to that chart that looks at how in the U.S. There's women outpacing men when it comes to getting university diplomas.
Right. So I think that I'm not going to speak about the United States since I am here in London and I am also a French national. But I will talk about the gender gap. And so this gender gap online, you know, it is more than screen time. It's the same thing that we've seen in the classroom. You know, whose voice matters, whose body is judged, whose pain is ignored. It's these types of issues that we see online that cause issues. I can just say that I think we really have to ask some of these critical thinking questions. I'm always just a broken record with this. It comes back to critical thinking. You know, even the clip that you showed, you know, who made the joke? Why, you know, there were three men sitting there, one woman. Why was she laughing? Let's, you know, discuss these things. Did she feel pressure? Is this because she needs to keep her job? You know, these are the things that we need to understand. We need to help train a generation, boys and girls.
Your thoughts on this, Jacob Johansson? Jacob Johansson, you were talking earlier about the fact that there are this perception of differences. How much of it is reality in the real world?
I do think that we live in a culture that in the West, irrespective of how many, you know, how advanced we are, how progressive we are when it comes to gender and so on, I do think we live in a culture that collectively and not necessarily consciously, but more sort of unconsciously or structurally as well, punishes vulnerability in men in a very different way than it would. Than that, how that's done to women or others. Vulnerable men are collectively punished, and that is a problem. And that is why we are seeing that those sort of problems that we have. We seem to be unable to develop a different sense of masculinity that, you know, takes vulnerability into account. That's why.
Yeah, define for us what you mean by vulnerability.
Pardon?
Explain to us what you mean by vulnerability there.
Well, you know, Andrew Tate is so successful across sort of the age range because he is cultivating an idea that if you are successful economically, you will be successful romantically, and vice versa. And he just does it in an incredibly extreme and sort of, you know, destructive and misogynist way. But that is an idea that is actually present in society as a whole. It's absolutely there as a sort of fantasy that particularly applies to men, I think. And it's sort of passed on. It's, you know, we grew up with this idea. And if you're not successful on those terms, you will have failed. And of course, that's a very simplistic idea. It harms everybody. And I think we do need to have a conversation about that so that we can arrive perhaps at a different way of you know, working through or addressing vulnerability issues of, you know, questions around, you know, what does it mean to be a man? What is it? What does masculinity mean? What does it mean to be, you know, a woman? What does femininity mean? All of those questions are central to adolescence, but they are central to everybody throughout our lives. So I think we need to have a conversation around, and we don't seem to be able to do that sort of collectively as a society.
Are the recommendations put forth by the Gender and Geopolitics Institute when it comes to addressing vulnerability as felt by men and women?
So there's a lot to do, and I think it's a constant battle on the long term effort. I think we need to dismantle large scale patriarchal systems. What we have been saying today is that not only that social media is a vehicle, but those young boys and men, and Jamie in the series Adolescence, they are not. They are radicalized online, but they also reproduce what they have seen on TV. Mechanisms and systems that they have seen at school, even in their own families. So I think masculinism and the manosphere is a consequence of a global context of exploitation and discrimination against women and girls. And this loop of graphic content and hateful speeches only exacerbate the dehumanization of women and girls, which enable, after that, the violent acts by those young boys and men.
The character in the series, he's radicalized, but he's also intelligent. Yep. His favorite subject at school is history. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not saying they are supporters of the manospheres are dumb or naive. Mr. Johansson talked about the vulnerability. You can be smart and feeling unhappy, feeling uncertain, and then being more vulnerable to extreme discourses. So Jamie is smart, but I think maybe he likes critical thinking, like Miss. I'm sorry, my co-panelist just mentioned, I think he lacked tools to decipher and to counter hateful speech online, and which ones of his vulnerabilities are the fault of women and girls, and how he deemed the girl victim responsible for how he felt personally.
Elizabeth Milovinov, let me ask you, because we're also, with more time spent before screens, is less time spent mingling, is part of the problem that, men are spending less time with women in social situations, and therefore the echo chamber is really a sort of a dividing line that we're back to the way it was when I was a little boy in France, where you had all boys public schools and all girls public schools.
Yes. And as somebody who went to a mixed with boys and girls, I know exactly what you're talking about. Of course, this is an issue. But I think it always goes back to that question of vulnerability and where are their safe spaces? And really, I think parents and caregivers need to realize that the online world is not necessarily a safe space. It's not where we want our children to go and get, reproductive health information. So why do we want them to learn how to be a man or how to learn how to be a woman online? This whole idea of just this toxicity, and it's coming, I mean, we see it everywhere. It's for me, it's just mind-boggling because I'm, again, trying to wonder how can we possibly allow people to be creative, to show their best selves, and still be vulnerable online without getting that sort of pushback. And it's really a challenge. I also just want to come back to one point. You had mentioned the statistic about those 30 hours online, teenagers spending a week. For me, the question isn't so much those 30 hours, but what are they doing? Are they, is it some of it used for school, or or are they just randomly, you know, on some dating app or some gaming console thing? So I think we need to dig in again, always keep asking those questions about what is happening.
Elizabeth, you talk about safe spaces. What about common spaces? Where can we find common spaces that will perhaps reduce this resentment?
Yeah, I think that this is the whole idea of when we start finding those positive influencers, those positive YouTube channels, just that positive content that really does exist. And it can be as simple as just Googling or going on, you know, an internet browser and looking for positive influencers, positive male role models, public figures, media figures. I mean, they do exist. It's just that, you know, the algorithm, they get kind of pushed down because it's not as exciting as someone who's running around spouting all sorts of hateful content that people are picking up.
Jacob Johansson, in your conversations with your students, is there a sense that there's a less of a common space that there's, or are we perhaps exaggerating the point?
I think these common spaces, they do still exist. I don't think social media platforms are the right sort of spaces for any kind of meaningful debate to occur. But if we think about universities, for example, you know, if we think about schools and so on, that's where we can have a debate and work. Well, you know, we can come together and so on. I think that is really very important, and I am able to have, you know, very robust but also very interesting conversations with my students and also with my male, many of my students are male about these issues. So it is a possibility. I think online is not the right space.
So what needs to be done? If you're a regulator, what do you do?
Well, I mean, this is an issue of regulation. That's undoubtedly the case. I think we have talked about that. And of course, what we also know is that the internet is very, very difficult to regulate because it's a global, you know, it's a global space. I mean, we are now seeing Facebook, Meta, because of the Trump administration, effectively undoing you know, content moderation regulations and so on their platform. So I think one answer to that might be, because the issue is that, of course, all mainstream social media platforms that we have are profit driven. They are based on you know, selling user data in return to targeted advertising. So what we actually need is a public service internet that is not profit driven, that doesn't have a business model sort of at the heart of it. But that's something the EU could, you know, sort of work towards, for example, because it would be very a different space. It would be easier to regulate. It wouldn't be profit driven and so on.
Alice Apostoli, we live in an age where these social medias, most of them are American, and as Jacob just explained, profit-driven. Can Europeans redefine the rules of how we interact online?
I think so. Access to those platforms can be regulated. In the EU, there are legal corpus that have already been adopted, like the Digital Service Act, which include moderation about hateful content. There is legal regulations on child pornography, for example. It can be expanded to misogynistic content, graphic content of all sorts. I do think the EU has a role to play here. And with the Gender and Geopolitics Institute, we issued a report that has been presenting 40 recommendations to the European Union and its member states to better regulate those platforms.
But now we're in a moment where the calls are for less regulation.
on the American side, not necessarily on
the EU. So you're optimistic?
Not necessarily, but I do think we have an opportunity to stand against these US global platforms. And I do believe in alternatives. For example, there were a campaign in France where a lot of NGOs and political leaders deleted their X account and chose Blue Sky or Mastodon instead, which are the same graphics, the same concept, but on a platform that is not openly neglecting fact-checking services and adopting Manosphere codes.
All right.
I want to say that I am optimistic. I am optimistic. I think that that Europe is doing a great job with regulation. We've seen with GDPR, and despite the fact that many of these tech companies and gaming platforms are based in the United States, they still want to do business in Europe, and so that means they have to adhere to the laws. So I think that flexing the muscle might just help. I also think that if we go beyond this, we're talking about safe spaces, technology companies, industry. Really, this is something that we've been talking about for years called safety by design. It already exists. It's just for them to privilege safety over engagement.
Safety it's over engagement. Elizabeth Milodrov, we'll end on that optimistic note. Thank you for being with us from London. I want to thank Jacob Johansson. I want to thank as well Alice Apostoli. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
The militia is breaking down. The enemy will be defeated.
Many have left. Those who stayed did so at the risk of their lives.
Staying at the hospital for 1, 2, 3 days, that's normal. Once I stayed for 12 days straight.
I don't know if I'll survive. May God seek justice.
Those who return do so either out of necessity.
I want to be a doctor. That's why, despite the war, despite the fighting, I came back to school.
Or as an act of faith.
We have a saying, as long as our souls are here, we can rebuild.
Watch Reporters Plus on France 24 and France24.com.